Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with Coach Tony Andonoff. Tony shares with us how to start viewing food as fuel, the benefits of tracking macros, and why a strong mindset and discipline are key. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now, on to my conversation with Tony. Tony Andonoff, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me on today.
It's my real pleasure. Honestly, we're gonna have lots of great things to talk about in terms of coaching, in terms of client struggles, and how to get the most out of your coaching experience. But I would love to hear from you. What's the number one thing you're excited for the listener to learn today?
Really, to explain more to them about how food is to be used as fuel instead of always a mechanism for pleasure. I find that that's something that a lot of people don't try, or they really don't picture that in their mind as food is fuel, as they picture it more as just something that they do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and I think this is a really good point, especially because we are so tuned or so primed to, like, nowadays think about everything needs to be the most pleasurable experience. Like when you turn on the TV or you listen to radio, or even if you look on Instagram, everything's like, this is the most delicious thing ever. And there is nothing wrong with having a meal that's super delicious or even indulgent sometimes, but not every meal needs to be that experience. I sometimes think with clients that say, oh, I didn't feel like eating XYZ, or I had a craving for this and that. Like, it happens to all of us. Like, obviously, I will include myself into that too, but we can't listen to what our body wants us to eat on a daily basis, and yet alone on a mealy basis, because if we do that, we're gonna be overweight. We're gonna go for these highly palatable foods. But yeah, before we talk more about this, because this is a really important topic, why don't you tell us how you got into coaching, Tony?
Well, to be quite honest, I became a competitor a little bit later in life. I competed in my first bodybuilding show when I was 47 years old. I looked in the mirror that year, and I had been that typical gen pop type exercise guy. I've been around gyms since my early 20s, and I would work out throughout the week and really wouldn't pay attention so much to my diet on the weekends, and I would kind of partake in a beverage or two that wasn't good for my body and overall. And so I kind of lived that lifestyle for through my 30s and late 20s, 30s, and even into my 40s. And as my I'm happily married for 23 years now and going, and I have a 20-year-old daughter. And as she was reaching her teenage years, I'm kind of like her coming up on her teenage years, I was like, I need to be around. I lost my parents at a younger age, and I didn't want to be or duplicate that. So I wanted to change the tide and not do maybe make some of the choices with food and nutrition and exercise that maybe they did. And I wanted to change that by leading by example. So I knew to do that, I had to do it myself. I had to look myself in the mirror and genuinely say, what do I want to do? And I just flat out said, I'm going to get in the best shape of my life. And that year, and this is going on 9 years ago, and I said, and I was able to do that. I looked better in the mirror. I was more healthy, more fit, had more energy than I'd ever had in my 20s and 30s, to be quite honest. And I had a good local another company that I grew up kind of. Because I'm in the St. Louis area, there was a company called First Form that some people may know about that hear this call, be on this call, but that see this podcast. But I was surrounded by that, and so I had an environment of people that weren't necessarily in the group of friends that I woke up with or grew up with. So I had to break out of that and be willing to take that leap of faith and go all in for myself and my family. So, in doing that, I learned a lot about how the body works and things like that. I had kind of a quasi coach that wouldn't allow me to pay him. Everyone's maybe had that in the past, but he was took me under his wing and coached me into my first bodybuilding show, which was really cool. Long story short, I went 23 weeks of keto into that show. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that for anyone else, But I did learn a lot about how my body works and how my body worked using fat as fuel instead of carb source. So it was an interesting thing that I learned about mindset, strengthening a mindset to be able to go 23 weeks with 30 or less carbs on a daily basis. Was not an easy thing to do, but it taught me a lot of what I actually could do when I really put in my mind to something. So then once I get through that, I started thinking a little bit more about helping, as a lot of people do that compete at some level, whether it be CrossFit, bodybuilding, whatever it may be. They tend to sometimes want to help others right around it. It's kind of a normal transition. So I had people starting to ask me a lot of questions as I got in that kind of shape, and what are you doing, and all those things. So obviously, I just started helping people for free as much as I could, and just giving it whatever advice I could to help them to get better and to experience some of the things I was experiencing. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love how you decided to pay it forward and you used your own, not just your own knowledge and experience, but obviously you went through a phase of probably evaluating, okay, what's applicable for everybody? Not everybody needs to do keto. Not everybody needs to be as extreme as a competitor, but how can I make this useful for general population, I would imagine.
Well, absolutely. And currently, most of the, I would say a good portion of the people I coach is general pop, so a gen population. So non-competitors, in other words, they just want to be the dad, middle-aged man with a dad bod, or the high school or college female that just wants to be more competitive, or actually just feel and look better. So it's all across the board right now, as far as what can I do to just help them be better in the time in which that I'm able to coach them, whether it be learning nutrition, learning the basics of macros. Like I said, how is food used as fuel? How will it fuel your workouts? How will it make you feel? How will you be able to study better in school if you're feeding your body with the right foods? To take this off of me, it's even learning from people through social media, through podcasts, learning from somebody like you, Lisa, who really knows how to use food to fuel the body. I mean, you do a phenomenal job. I mean, posting the different foods and different colors spectrum that you add to your diet, and that is going to be very beneficial, or that is beneficial just for someone to watch that information. So, I collect all of that. That data around me, I'm definitely constantly learning. I think as a coach, all of us, John Gorman, will speak to this. People like Jason Theobald, Jace Lopez, just some that come to mind, is they're continually learning what we know in the health and fitness space now compared to 5 or 10 years ago has changed quite a bit. The baseline stuff is still there, but there's a lot of things that we've all sharpened our pens and pencils and gotten better at. So I think just collectively keeping an open mind on how to better help our clients is something that's important to do.
Oh, so
And to keep that.
important. Yes,
Go
I
ahead.
couldn't agree more. I think just for any coach, and I mean, that's the beauty and one of the, I guess, frustrating things sometimes when it comes to exercise science, nutrition, etc. We're always going to keep learning. There is no like end point where we're like, okay, we've learned everything that there is to learn about the human body. Here you go. But I guess it keeps it interesting for us as well. So yeah, let's talk more about the food as fuel. I'm really interested in how you go about adopting that mindset with your clients, because I could imagine that many of the Gen Pop clients that come to you, they have that mindset of more like, oh, I didn't feel like eating XYZ or I'm craving XYZ. So how do we transition from this kind of attitude into it's all right if food for the majority of the time is fuel, and only sometimes I'm like really letting myself go with what I'm feeling in the moment.
Well, I think there's some tough conversations you have to have with clients, and one of those things is as like myself, you, John, Jason, other people I mentioned. It's a lifestyle for us. Like, we've already equated that to a lifestyle. Where general population, they want to do better. They wouldn't seek out a coach like us if they didn't want to do better, right? So, really, just Finding a spot where we can start the process with them just to get them better, work on one thing at a time. For some people, it's just hydrating. It's as simple as waking up, getting out of bed, having a glass of water when you wake up in the morning with maybe a little bit of salt, right? Or sodium, iodized salt or mineral salt, just to kind of break that fast as far as your body. For most people, hopefully they've slept 7 to 9 hours, and then they have it's been that long since they've had any hydration. So important to start off the day with that and getting digestion going. And then with the foods, I always tell people.
Did you somehow I can't hear you. I don't know why. Maybe your thing got unplugged.
No, it's plugged
Oh
in.
no, here you
Hello.
go. You're back. Yep.
Sorry.
Now you're all good.
So no, so they tend to not have enough vegetables. I see a lot, or even adding some fruits in, or they may not have most of the time, especially with females. I see them under eating protein. So the importance of protein is several things. It's allowing you to maintain and build muscle. And sometimes that conversation will scare females off because they think muscle. I don't want to have a bunch of muscle. I don't want to be bulky. And what I always have to have that conversation with them is your body is not built, your hormones are not built to be able to put on a ton of muscle. That's just not how the female body is made. Now, some females' genetics are a little bit different, right? And they might have stronger lower half than an upper half or what have you, or just passed down through their lineage. They might have a different body type than someone else, but that doesn't mean that if you go and work out and you eat a fair amount of protein that you're going to put on muscle and look like a male. It's not feasible. You're not going to have that look. It's going to be more of an you're going to have better body composition by eating higher amounts of protein. It's going to satiate you, so you're not going to be as hungry for the junkie or the foods that we really don't need. Those cravings will start to get less and less as you add more protein, and then pair that with a quality carbohydrate like a red potato, sweet potato, which are lower in starch, and then also incorporate obviously rice in there. So that's kind of my way of teaching as far as a good solid protein. For your foundation of roughly around 30 grams for most females, a good portion size. And then also, pairing that in with a good carb source, which I typically stick with. Again, this is going to depend on the clientele, but or the age of the female. But as I see old, as I work with older patients, our clients, I'm sorry, or that I may be working with, as I see digestion becoming an issue, I try to stay away things that can inflame the gut. So I stick more with like cream of rice or potatoes. It's more the main carb sources. And then of course your trace carbs come from your vegetables and some fruits and things like that, which I like to entertain in there. But the toughest part, quite honestly, and for people to adapt to, is just really getting enough protein in first and foremost, and then pairing that with a vegetable at least 3 meals a day, and then also having your carb sources, which I like to build more around their exercise or their training that I have them doing, and that differs from client to client as well. Some clients it might be 3 days a week to get some kind of resistance training, and other clients it might be at more five if they're more in a competitive lifestyle, whether it be a sport that they're playing or they're looking to step on stage at some point. So it really is just going to vary from client to client. But going back to food as fuel, as it really starts with protein, and then you want to add your carbs and your fats along with that. And fats more than anything, and I don't know if this is not holistically true, but fats really, I always like to equate good quality fats to is going to feed the brain. And it's the fuel for the brain is what I believe is the most important thing. It is for good quality fats. As we talk through fats, we could talk about just the basics, olive oils, coconut oil. I like to stick with those as mainstays, grass-fed butter. And then of course you're going to get some fats, some saturated fats from different animals, animal fats, and then also from eggs and whole eggs. So
Yeah, some wonderful foundations here in the sense of where to start when building good food or meal that fuels your body. Really great foundations here. And I agree, like, even though our immediate thinking, let's just say, or our immediate brain function is nourished by glucose or by carbs, I think what you're referring more to is like that long-term brain health and preventing cognitive decline, etc. And I couldn't agree more. Also adding those omega-3s in there and, you know, some healthy nuts and avocado and that sort of stuff. So I love that absolutely. And I think one thing that's important to mention, or two actually, number one, what I have seen over and over again is that even though at first these kind of meals might seem quite bland in comparison to, let's just say, lasagna or pasta Alfredo, or like I don't know, I'm just like some meals with a ton of sauces and 20 different ingredients and so on. But your taste buds are going to adapt to eating more plain foods, and after a while, like, even vegetables can taste absolutely amazing when they're steamed and a little bit of sea salt on there and maybe some other herbs. And you don't need a half a cup of creamy Alfredo sauce and cheese to make it go down. Like, your taste buds are going to adapt. I always just encourage people to, well, open their mind and be like, obviously you can't expect steamed broccoli to taste the same as the super creamy whatever. Like, have a realistic expectation, but also there's nothing wrong with like weaning yourself off of what you're currently eating if you are saying, well, I can't get that steamed broccoli down right now, like, it's just I don't like it at all. You know, start with having the broccoli and adding cheese on there. And then maybe the week after that, you can have a little bit of less cheese. And then the week after that, maybe you're just adding quite a bit of everything but the bagel seasoning, or, you know, whatever floats your boat. And eventually you're going to be like, oh, this is not so bad. And then eventually you're going to be like, I'm actually craving broccoli. I went away on a weekend trip and I really want those greens. Like, I've heard that so many times with clients that initially had an aversion to vegetables or had an aversion to higher protein foods, and then they go away and eat kind of like according to their old or former eating patterns, and they're like, Lisa, you won't believe it, but I was so craving my regular meals. I was craving, you know, whatever greens or lean proteins that I normally have. This is so cool. My taste buds changed. I don't know, have you experienced the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. And I experienced it not only with myself, but with clients, because it's really crazy how the human body works, and your taste buds, like you said, work. If you cut some of those not so quality nutritious foods out that you may be eating, those sauces and things we're talking about, extra cheese and all those things, and you started putting vegetables in that you may feel like you're not going to eat a vegetable, it's just like everything about the vegetable you can't stand. I mean, I can't force people to do that. But if you can, could stomach a vegetable, certain vegetables, and get some color in different vegetables, and then you start eating those, I tell every client within 2 to 4 weeks, your body will start to crave those vegetables. And like you said, if you go off and go back to the old way of eating and you eat even a couple meals that way, like if you get past one meal, let's say 2 to 3 meals in over a couple days, or you go on a vacation or hiatus, and you are going to crave those foods and you're going to want those foods back. It happens to everyone. There's really no getting around it, but you have to commit. The commitment, first several weeks of getting those foods into your diet, and you will never be sorry for it. And if clients can just trust the process, and I talk to clients all the time about this, because as you know, most clients within that first 4 to 6 week period, that's a breaking point for a lot of them, as far as like they don't know if they are doing the right thing. And you have to have the come to Jesus meeting with or conversation with them. It's like, this happens to everyone. You're not the only one this happens to. Now, there's outliers that have been doing this, and they maybe, if like I was to hire, hire my coach is John Gorman, and I want to do another competition and I hire John, well, he's not going to have these conversations with me about food because he already knows I know how it works, right? But for non-competitors or people that haven't lived that lifestyle or eaten that way before, it's a big change for them. And us as coaches, we realize that. So being able to have that conversation and that honest communication back and forth with the client is very important, because we know we a lot of us have been there. I didn't always eat the way I'm eating currently over the last 7, 8, 9 years. So I know what they're going through. I've been there. So I think that's another benefit of coaches that have got some tenure or some age on them. They've seen this. They've tried a lot of different things. I know you do this. I know all coaches that are good coaches that want to get better, they try different things, like you're cold plunging now, right? So you're trying that. You wanted to see what the response is. And I know you're not only doing that for yourself, Lisa, you're doing that to help your clients. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, totally. I've always seen myself a little bit as a guinea pig, but not just for myself, but also like, okay, how do I feel on, a lower carb or higher carb approach? Like, what works better for me, and how does that allow me to relate to some clients better when I hear their feedback? So, yeah, I totally agree that every coach who wants to keep growing should live a lifestyle of like, I'm open to new things, obviously not stupid things that are not backed by some science at least, but yeah, what's the latest on XYZ, like intermittent fasting? Could that be a strategy for some people or not? Like, how does that make people feel? So yeah, I love that you have that approach. And I think if we can give people some practical takeaways from the point of food as fuel, it really is like giving it some time. It can't just be like you can't switch your mindset around foods within a couple of days. It does take a few weeks of you committing to it. Your taste buds will change. Give it time. And also, like things like seasonings, low calorie condiments like sriracha sauce, hot sauce, mustard, some soy sauce here and there can really help, like spice up, so to speak, a quote unquote bland meal. Even just how you prepare it, like don't overcook your chicken breast and then complain that it tastes like nothing or like a boot or so. Cook it in a slow cooker so it stays nice and juicy. Add some sauces to it that are calorie friendly, and it's gonna be super delicious with your rice. You don't need a whole lot of calories to make a meal juicy, so or meal delicious, even if it doesn't have to be really indulgent. So no, I think those are really good points. And you also mentioned that it's a matter of like having those conversations with clients. And I could imagine that similarly to some of my clients, initially, some of your clients might have an aversion towards macro tracking. Like if I take on a new client, and most of the time I will ask, have you tracked macros before? What is your experience with that? And often they say, yeah, I've tracked and it didn't work for me. And then I kind of get like, okay, tell me more about that. Like what didn't work for you? And very often they would have tried it themselves and used the auto settings on MyFitnessPal or whatever tracker they were using. MyFitnessPal probably gave them a generic number of like 1200 calories. Very, very, unrealistic for most people to make that sustainable. Way too low in protein. And on top of that, they had no guidance as to how to track food when they were eating out or when they were eating with their family. So on those days, they just stopped completely. And then obviously, it didn't give them the results with regards to weight loss. So my question for you is, have you experienced the same with your clients? And then if so, how do you get them to quote unquote buy into tracking macros?
Well, it's one of the biggest things I deal with clients, especially. And I hate that. I know there's a lot of females that listen to this podcast, but a lot of females really struggle with it. At least out of the gate, it's a bigger struggle to get women just to get enough protein and to get used to eating protein with every meal. So they may eat protein. I don't want to throw a random number out there, but from my experience, I would say an average female maybe eats protein in two of their feedings a day, some type of protein. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, something
If
like
they've never done this
60,
before.
50, 60 grams, 70 grams
Right.
for the course of the day. Like, yeah, I see that very often when we do client take-ins.
So just getting them to eat more protein and explaining why that is so important. And I like to equate it, and sometimes it's difficult for, let's say, a 20-year-old client compared to a 50-year-old female, right? If you're talking to a 20-year-old female, I always like to coach for the long term. That's kind of my approach, and that may be different than especially a lot of competitive coaches where they're coaching mostly competitors. I've always liked to take, and maybe it's because I'm a little older, right? I always like to say, well, what is this going to do to your body in 10 years from now? How are you going to feel in 10 years from now? And I try to coach for the long term. So if I'm coaching somebody for 6 months or I have them for 6 years, I want them to know that when they're done working with me, they have a baseline to go back to, even if they fall off, even if they don't rehire me. They can just simply go, I remember when Tony told me about this macros and where and how protein's important, how to get good quality fats in, make sure I'm getting my vegetables for, for nutrition purposes, and and just all those things that they're taught throughout that process is how important it is to carry that and to use that as you go along in life. And not everybody's going to track their food every day for the rest of their life. I don't do that. To be quite honest, I've learned so much of what it takes and around where I need to be that if I'm not trying to compete in something in the next couple of months, I know what I'm going to have for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and I'm usually going to have two snacks. So I usually have five eating periods, and that really works well for me. And then, quite honestly, if I have some issues or if I have a client that maybe has some issues, I'll coach them through that. As far as if it's just a little irritability, like would you be interested or would you consider like a fasting period? And it could be intermittent fasting, or it might say 24 or 36-hour fast. And I tend to implement that when a client is open to that, because that will tend to flare up some indigestion and things like that. I know I'm getting a little bit off the beaten path, but I just want to talk about an overall holistic view of how I like to coach and work with my clients, that I want them to be set up for success for the future, not only for the time that they're actually paying me to coach them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I love it. I think everyone should have a long-term view for themselves and should also want that out of their coaching, not just thinking, oh, where am I at in 6 weeks or maybe even 6 months, but like, how can I use this information and even ask my coach lots of questions? Like, even if they're, let's say, in a cut now and they're coaching with you and maybe throughout the course of the coaching, every now and then throwing in a question of like, hey Tony, this is cool. Could you just I have a random question. Could you tell me if I was in a lean gaining phase right now, how would you change my macros or would you change anything about my training? Like, I always encourage or want to encourage people and clients to just be inquisitive and ask questions because we're not going to tell you things that we don't know that you don't know. Like, I don't know if you have digestive issues unless you tell me, hey, I only go to the bathroom every third day. I don't know if your sleep is off unless you tell me I wake up 3 times per night. So, like, be commu if as a client recommendation, if you want to get the most out of your coaching, ask a lot of questions. Anything that comes up for you, no question should be off limits with your coach, whether it's a male female combination or whatever. If I coach men, I also want to know about their libido. If you coach women, you want to know about their cycle. This is important stuff. So I truly love that attitude and that you have with your clients. And in terms of tracking, I think it's great when you're framing that with your clients that have that maybe reservation or like kind of doubts about tracking and just say like, hey, can we use this as a learning period just to find out what foods are actually high in protein, what foods are of what calorie content? I'll be honest, Tony, when I started tracking about almost 10 years ago, I was of the conviction that I was following a high protein diet because I was kind of following like a paleo sort of diet when I got into it. And I had already heard like, eggs and salmon and whatever. So I was like, I have a ton of protein in my, I have 2 eggs for breakfast. I have salmon for my lunch. I eat chicken for my dinner. There is no reason why I should be low on protein. And I tracked and I got to like 110 grams. And mind you, that's probably like on the low end of being okay for someone my size. But if I want to go into a weight loss phase or really optimize things, I'm like now I'm sort of aiming more for 130, maximum 150, depending on how I feel. I give myself that range. But yeah, I was like, there's no way I'm short on protein. And I have seen that so many times with clients as well that they thought they were eating high protein or they thought they were eating in a calorie deficit. And then we start tracking and start adding up things like the creamer in your coffee, the few bites and licks that you have from your child's lunch, the salad dressing and whatever that you thought was healthy, but yeah, it might be healthy, but it is high in calories. So I think tracking is just such a valuable tool where we can actually make sure we're in a calorie deficit and not just hoping, guessing we're in a calorie deficit. And we can make sure we're actually getting enough protein, enough fiber, and not just thinking, oh yeah, that's probably sufficient. Would you agree with that?
100%. I would say the number one thing that changed my health and nutrition was tracking food. I'm not, it's not even close. I mean, without a doubt, it changed my life, my wife's life. We both started tracking together and at the same, relatively the same time. And we had no clue. We had no clue. And it's okay. It's not embarrassing to admit that. I mean, that most people that have never tracked, they, I mean, it does, it teaches you so much about food, like quantities, quality, like size of food. I mean, I know there's coaches out there to this day that still give people their meals. I just not that guy. Like if somebody comes to me and wants that, I don't like coaching that way because I don't feel like I'm bringing enough value. Like just
Yeah, I
writing
think.
someone his meal plan, so easy to, I mean, it's time consuming for the coach, but most coaches are going to write like four or five different options. They're not going to write like a spectrum of foods that maybe they should be eating. Would you agree with that? So
Yeah, I would
I
say a
just feel
meal
like I'm
plan.
shortchanging a client. Like I'm not teaching them enough.
No, totally. I agree with that. And I would say a meal plan can be a good starting line if someone has like literally no idea what's a high protein food and they're like, I don't want to go through 100 different food options through trial and error. Lisa, what could be a sample breakfast? I give people like sample meal ideas if they ask, or if I see in their food log, like literally they have no vegetables in there, they have no protein sources. It's like, okay, here are 15 different protein things you could include in your breakfast or in your lunch or whatever it might be. So I think it, as a complete newbie, or if you're really like, I don't even know where to start at all, a rough meal plan can be somewhat of a guiding line, but it should never be like, you need to follow this and you can only choose from option A, B, or C. And because it also encourages like an all or nothing thinking and mindset, it encourages a kind of an unhealthy relationship with food because you think, okay, if I have something that's outside of that, I'm off of my plan and I'm just going to start again tomorrow. So I think for sustainability and exactly the point that you were touching on beforehand, with like, where's that person at in 6 years and 16 years, meal plans are not very helpful. Of course, if we're working with a competitor, a meal plan can be, an option to just make sure that their digestion is totally on point, or we're especially going into the competition, that things are super dialed in. But I think for the average person, macros are so much more educational, as you mentioned. And I do think, yes, it is very person dependent. I think some people are really content with tracking long term and they don't even get tracking fatigue at all. I do sometimes hear like, oh, I'm tracking fatigued. I needed a break. And when someone says that, I also want to find out why, because often they're not actually tracking fatigued, they are calorie deficit fatigued. And the other reason could be that they are just trying to be too tight with their macros. Like, if they're always aiming to be within 2 grams of their fat or 3 grams of their carbs and so on, that's totally unnecessary. Let's just say, like, okay, if you're tracking fatigue, can we just maybe wean off a little bit or become a little bit looser and just say, hit your protein roughly, stay within 100 calories of this calorie target, and everything else, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if one day you have 75 grams of fats and, say, 150 grams of carbs, or another day you have 200 grams of carbs and 65 grams of fats, as an example. Give yourself a little bit more wiggle room, and then often people find tracking becomes a lot more sustainable, and they actually start practicing maintenance as opposed to just tracking, associating tracking with being in a deficit and being deprived. That's just what I've seen with several clients in the past as well. And I want to shift gears just a little bit. I know that tracking is a super important topic we could probably keep talking about, but I want to round it off by kind of going back a little bit to what you said in the beginning. And that was, well, you achieved peak physique at 47. You just put your head down. You were like, okay, I might have to cut some people out, certain things that I used to do in my life, like having the beverages and so on. And it really sounds like you knuckled down. You had such a strong mindset. You developed all this discipline to allow yourself to be successful with this. And maybe you can talk a little bit about the importance of having or developing a strong mindset and discipline in general, if someone wants to be successful with their own physique journey or with anything in life, really.
Well, I think first thing you have to have is you have to have a supportive household. Okay. I deal with so many people, and it's certainly even some family members where you can't have like, you can do it. It just makes it extremely difficult. So like if you have a significant other, or you're blessed to be married to a man or a woman or whatever the situation may be, and they're living a lifestyle where they're just off the walls, like they're doing everything you're not doing, it is going to be very, very difficult for you to stick to the plan. It's not going to help. It's not going to help the relationship. On the other hand, if you both adapt that fit lifestyle and both tend to get exercise, I don't care if I'm like a gym goer or my wife plays tennis. I mean, as long as you guys are active, right? As a pairing, you're going to have a lot better chance of having success. Because then when you do go out and you have an off-track meal and you want to have an anniversary, a birthday, or just a special occasion, or just you haven't gone out in a while, you can have that off meal. But then you even check both yourself, and you go and you have, let's say you have a steak, but you don't have a potato with butter and cinnamon and brown sugar and all this other stuff. You just have a plain baked potato, sweet potato, and it tastes great because you love the taste of sweet potato. Because I don't know about you, but in America, a lot of people grow up with sweet potatoes and they simply get them candied and they've got all this garbage and sugar on them. I'm like, it's the sweetest natural, like one of the most naturally sweet non-fruits out there. I mean, it tastes so good. I could eat sweet potatoes 7 days a week. I like it that much. And I just think that just knowing that that you can do things like that and do that together is so important. So finding, if that person's not in your household, you need to find a coach that believes and trusts in you and wants to work with you and through the tough days and the good days, right? So celebrate those wins together and have the tough love together when you need to. And I always tell my clients, I said, the more questions you ask me, the more engaged I know you are, the better your situation is going to be. Because if you run and hide, first thing a coach knows is you're not doing what you need to do, or you don't want to do it, or you just don't know what to say, or you're embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed if you fall off plan. Everyone does it. I've done it. We've all done it. Lisa, you've probably done it. It's just not letting that go haywire where it lasts 2, 3 weeks. This is all stems back to what we're talking about with mindset. So it's not easy to cut people out of your life. It's not easy to not go to that bar, to not go to that restaurant. But if you have a long goal, you have to have a goal that is for the long term, I believe, to be successful in that type of a lifestyle. So if you're saying to yourself, and for me, I want to be a healthy grandparent someday if I'm blessed with grandkids for my daughter, but I also want to be here for my daughter in general as she grows into adulthood. And I can't be that. I can't be that if I'm in the grave. So, no one ever knows what's going to happen outside of things that we're in control of. But we are in control of is what we eat and what we put in our mouth, and then how much energy we expend on a daily basis. And it could be as simply as taking a walk for some Gen Pop clients. It might not be lifting weights right out of the gate. It might be just taking a walk. It might be introducing yourself to yoga. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. It's just get up off of the chair, get off of the couch, and to just start somewhere. Everybody's got a different starting point. But a biggest part of all of this we're talking about, you can exercise yourself to death, you can play every sport to death, but if you're not hitting the nutritional piece, you will never get where you want to be, not only in the mirror, but with body composition. It just doesn't happen without food. There's an outlier here and there, but they're one in a thousand. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It just like physiologically, it's so much easier to eat 1,000 calories. You can probably put 1,000 calories down in like 10 minutes easily if you drink it like maybe two minutes.
Right.
But like quote unquote out exercising it, that's gonna take you a long time, even if you do a quote unquote HIIT workout or a high intensity workout. But yeah, there are so many valuable things in there. So I think the first thing that I just hear you say over and over again, and I wanna highlight it because it truly is so important, is just the point of communication. Like whether that be with your coach, like being open and honest with your coach, asking questions, or whether it be with your partners, with your family. And I often say, don't be disappointed if your partners or your family environment doesn't necessarily cheer you up, or you know, like, oh, but my husband doesn't want to do that, or my kids don't eat healthy, and so on. We can't have that expectation of like, I want to change my life. No, everyone is going to support me. No, but what you can do is lead by example, make sure that they see
Perfect.
that you're enjoying changing your life, that you're enjoying adapting this new lifestyle, and maybe they will join in. And if they don't, they still see you as a role model. Maybe 10 years down the road, they will copy what you've done, or they will ask you what you've done. So you cannot expect your partner or spouse or family to join in, but you can, and you should have that conversation of like, hey, honey, I want to change my life, and this is what I'm doing. I would appreciate it if you know, maybe don't bring home pizza every single night because I'm going to be cooking something different. But you do whatever you want to do. If you want to join in, that's even better. If not, then, you know, like talking about it. I think this is so important. And the other thing that I wanted to highlight is also just searching for that accountability, because we do need to have accountability through other people. And we all, again, like, we're creatures of habit. We're gonna go, if stress comes in, as it does for everybody, we're gonna go back to our previous ways. And if we don't have someone who's like reminding us of our why, of why we started that, why we wanted something different, something better for ourselves, it can be really hard to stick with those goals. So I love how you have had that clarity of like, I'm doing this, yes, for me, but also for my family, for my daughter. And I just really like, this is what I'm after. I don't want to say I don't care if I lose people, but you know, it's my priority. So sometimes that requires cutting certain things and people and habits out of your life.
Well, and to add on to that, like I'm not I don't know how to say this without sounding arrogant. It's not an arrogance. It's like you want to do it year after year after year. Anybody can do this and have a fit lifestyle, and you can do that for 6 months or a year. The key is to stay in it for the long term, and that has to be you have to have an internal discipline and a commitment to do that, because there's so many things that can drag us off track from the lifestyle that we live, and so many people that we have our friends with, quite honestly, through getting to know you, getting to know John, as I talked about earlier, who's my personal mentor. It's just you got to surround yourself with like-minded people, especially in the coaching space, right? Because it can be a lonely space. I mean, heck, Lisa, you're on your own. You're all over the world. You're going to different countries, and it's really cool from the outside. Like, so I'm sure a lot of us get envious to see the beautiful places that you get to be. But you sacrifice a lot to do that, right? You're out on your own. You don't have family by you. You're making friends on the go. A lot of your friends are through podcasts like this, and people that you know are through social media. So I think that, that takes a ton of commitment, a ton of discipline to do what you're doing, and not everybody can do that. But the more that you can surround people around you like someone like yourself, is you can get to see that what can be if you put the discipline and the commitment into yourself, right? It's into yourself. It's like, I'm a firm believer, and I don't get into the weeds in this, but I believe in the man above, and then that he graced me with one life to live. So I'm going to be the best I can and the best person I can on a day-to-day basis. Do I have struggles? Absolutely. Everyone does. We all have struggles. But to be able to persevere and break through those things just by in our own actions is going to help. I don't want to say that I like motivate other people or whatever, but if I can help one other individual, or one person sees my content or hears me on this podcast, that if one thing I want them to take away from is they can do the same thing. And it's out there. Just follow the right people, learn from the people like yourself, Lisa, and you can be just more fit, more healthy, and more happy, and all those things are possible. It's not, they can come in a trilogy. It's not one as one thing, and that's it. So I think the sky's the limit once you take your own self serious and not try to please every single person around you, and you just please yourself first and foremost. And again, that may sound arrogant or whatever, but you got to take care of yourself first if you're going to help others around you. I think that's so important.
I couldn't agree more, and I have absolutely no doubt that all the work that you're doing inspires a lot of people around you, whether they voice it or not, and motivates a lot of people around you. So, yeah, I appreciate your work as well. I will most certainly make sure to link all your handles in the show notes so people can go and check out your content. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming on this podcast. And I know that we've given people a lot of practical tools to view food as fuel in a very positive manner, showing them the benefits of tracking and hopefully also the benefits of having or developing a strong mindset and discipline. So thank you so much for your time, Tony.
I greatly appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tony. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.